Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this guest episode, we welcome in Don Ross. Don is the founder and creator of Manhood Tribes. Don has served as a pastor and ministry leader for the past couple decades and has led and worked with men in a wide variety of settings. He loves the outdoors, beach and mountains, please, all things Lord of the Rings, and has a slight addiction to Coke Zero. He lives with his wife and two sons in Raleigh, NC area. And I forgot, this is the spontaneous bit at the beginning, Don.
Yeah.
I actually forgot to clarify, is NC North Carolina? I Googled it just beforehand.
Yeah, that's right.
North Carolina. So there
in
we go.
US,
spontaneous. Mark's, he screwed his setup. I meant to take care of this shit beforehand, but hold my hand up. I'm
it's all good, man. All good.
Good to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. This is great to be here. I'm looking forward to talking with you guys today.
Don, there's so much of me. I'm super pumped and crazy mad about the topic, like what your mission is in the world and like supporting fathers, how to bring their sons into that, like that initiatory rite of passage, you know, into manhood. However, there's one major thing jumping out of me in your bio.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings. Get the important shit out of the way first. What is it about Lord of the Rings? I have to say, I've sat through it twice, I think, at this point, if not three times, with my queen. Like my queen and my two girls, they're fancy. They just dig that shit. I'm struggling with Lord of the Rings, and I'm wanting to love it. I'm wanting to love it. I love Gandalf. Frodo I don't know. I just can't. I'm a Harry Potter dude. I like Harry. He's an irritating, arrogant little bitch, actually. Like, he's just really fucking irritating. I mean, if he just lean in on his elder a little bit more, I mean, he could have the story done and dusted like halfway through the first film or the first book.
Yeah.
But I like Harry. I just, what is it about Lord of the Rings? Why is that all doing it for you?
Man, we could be here all day just on that topic. You know, I love so much about it. Simply, I love the characters. I think for me, Aragorn is probably my favorite character. Just watching his story as kind of the king coming into his own and setting things to rights, and you know, I love that storyline. You know, I love the big overarching themes of good versus evil. You know, obviously that's a big element of the story. But I think honestly, the thing that probably gets me the most is the way that, and I see this being less and less true in stories that are being written and told kind of in our, you know, postmodern era, in the way that good overcomes evil is not because of, you know, good becomes more powerful than evil and it becomes this, you know, might makes right kind of story. Instead, it's really a story about sacrifice and about the lowly being, you know, raised up because of the way that they give of themselves for the sake of the world around them. I love that. I love that story. I love that theme. I think you find that in Harry Potter too, you know, as well. It's a little different twist there in Harry Potter, but definitely in the Lord of the Rings. I just think there's so much about that that rings true in our hearts as human beings, but I think especially as men, of being able to see the way that, you know, even the lowliest can overcome the greatest evil, and it's not because of strength or force, but because of sacrifice. So there it is.
I was looking on Etsy there this morning, of Hickson Gracie, you know, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, pretty much like a grandmaster. This, I think he's undefeated in his whole career, absolute legend. But he had this quote which was, if size mattered, the elephant would be the king of the jungle.
Yeah.
And it's just that perfect thing. And I love that you're tapping in there. And it's perfect. And in the show, like, guys, it doesn't matter. You know, as men, you're talking about boys becoming men. I know Don like this in a very sincere level. Myself as well, to share with you, you know, my work in Be the Husband She Brags About, that came from 4 years ago. My coming of age, my calling, the heroic calling, you know, the hero's journey, which was like breakdown, breakthrough in my marriage. My queen fell in love with another dude. It's like, hey, it was like, I just had to show up. But it was really that I was a boy.
Yeah.
I was an uninitiated boy.
Yeah.
Stuck in a 37-year-old or 36-year-old frame, trying my best, 10 out of 10 best, to be a man, but no idea. I didn't know. And I know time and time, every single guy that comes to Heroic Husbands men's circles, it's really getting up to speed with not having matured, not having had a process to come of age. And now, you know, guys listening in, they're now married. Most of them have kids. Most of them have a job. Most of them have a house, family, tons, every single thing that's been bombarded at them. Yeah. And yet they haven't come of age. I just like to share that with you. And like, it's just the perfection of this episode. I think it's just spontaneously coming from me for guys listening in. It's like, don't hide behind the idea that this is just about you initiating your son.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
There's a lot in this for you. Is that a fair enough thing to say, or what has your observation been?
It's beyond fair. You know, I think I think it absolutely needs to be said that, you know, we as adult males, you know, there's a whole lot of us that are walking around as boys in men's bodies, and you know the culture in our, you know, kind of Western world now, you know, I'm over here in the US. I don't know exactly what it's like in your neck of the woods, but you know, the whole conversation around manhood and masculinity has just gotten really, really confusing. You know, it is really difficult for men to figure out what does it mean to be a man. But as men, I think we kind of adopt this sort of like, you know, rough exterior, and we don't want to acknowledge that that's a real question that we have. You know, am I a man? What actually makes me a man? How would I know if I am one? Because there it takes a lot of vulnerability to be honest about that question, you know, to actually admit, I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that. And so because of that, we kind of keep that question tucked away. You know, we don't like to bring it out to the surface because it feels too almost shaming, you know, to admit that as a man, you've got some questions around that. But I think, you know, if we don't actually bring that question to the light of day, if we don't actually start asking, what does make me a man? And am I one? And how would I know if I am one? How do I get there? Like, if we don't really start coming to grips with that question, then we're never really going to make progress. You know, we can't hide our way into manhood. You know, it just doesn't work that way. And I think there's a lot of guys who are hiding from that question because we're too afraid to find out what the honest answer is.
I love the way you pitch that. What my natural curiosity is, I've two curiosities. What was your moment in your life when you started really looking at that question and finding the answer? But if can you please take us back and set the scene? Like, what were the dominoes in your life? And I know it's the impossible question to answer in a concise way, but some of the dominoes that knocked over in your early childhood and your upbringing that sort of crafted that hero's journey that arrived you, like Frodo and Harry Potter and all the rest, to have the call of the hero to ask that question, like, you know, what does it mean? Like, am I a man? Answer that question.
Yeah. So I would say for me, I kind of woke up to those questions in my early 20s very unexpectedly. I mean, I can remember being in my early 20s and starting just kind of out of the blue to have these questions sort of bombarding me, you know, internally. And it was like, Where did this come from? I've never had these thoughts in my life before. I've never wondered about what it means to be a man, or if I am one, or like, why am I having these questions, you know, hitting me all of a sudden? And I don't know if that's a kind of a natural part of just, you know, the maturing development of a man. When you start to kind of hit your early to mid 20s, I think some of that begins to surface, you know, call it biologically, spiritually, you know, however you want to phrase it. Like, I think we're hardwired for some of those things to really kind of start coming up at that phase of young adulthood. But for me, those questions kind of started coming out of nowhere. And I began to realize, you know, I didn't really have any good answers to it. And the questions wouldn't let up. And I tend to not be the kind of guy who hides from things that keep pestering me. So it's kind of like, if I've got a problem in front of me, I need to figure out how to solve it, or at least to do something about it. So it kind of set me on a path of just saying, I got to figure out what's going on here. And you know, you kind of asked like, what was some of the like background story for me of, you know, what was maybe going on, you know, childhood, and like, how did I come to the place, you know, of really asking those questions? I think for me, kind of a common theme that, you know, I've seen in working with a lot of men, kind of here in the US, is just noticing that a lot of us grew up with dads who were physically present in our homes, but not necessarily very emotionally or relationally present. And I don't necessarily mean that as a knock on our dads, because I think, you know, as dads from their generation, and I'm talking at this point, you know, baby boomers and older, I don't know that they were really taught that that was expected of them, you know, that they understood that that's what was maybe needed of them as a man, as a husband, as a father. And, you know, so I think because of that, the role was really like, just provide for your family, you know, be physically present, keep a stable home, and provide financially for your family. And that's really all that needs to be done. I got to my 20s and just kind of realized, like, I don't know that that was enough for me. You know, I don't know that that helped me get to where I actually need to be. Like, is that all that it means to be a man, is just to be a provider? Like, you know, to just kind of take care of my family that way. I really started to feel like that there was more to it than that, but I wasn't sure what the more was, you know, or how to be able to find that out. So, I just started asking a lot of questions. I started asking some questions of books. You know, I started trying to read as much as I could on manhood and masculinity, and just really trying to understand it that way. But I also just sat down with a bunch of guys, you know, guys who were my age, guys who were older than me, and, you know, that I respected and looked up to, and just said, like, hey, help me understand. Like, I feel like I'm asking all these kinds of questions about what does it mean to be a man, and I don't know the answers. And like, how have you navigated those questions? Like, what conclusions have you come to? And so, yeah, that for me was kind of the impetus, you know, just really kind of driving the conversation of trying to understand, what is manhood all about, and how do I know if I am one?
How was that journey in the initial days, weeks, months, maybe early years of that self-inquiry, but more importantly, reaching out to your local tribe? Because there's this thing of, you know, men don't like to talk. There's this, I sort of call bullshit in that, like, men are literally dying to talk. I speak to that. Yeah. It's like, we will jump from a bridge and at a frightening rate. But it's coming from a desire to talk, but not feeling that it's allowed to talk. Right. How is that transition for you, Don, from this super massive emerging curiosity at the core of your being, identifying as a man, and reaching out to your local community? How was that journey for you?
Yeah. Initially, it was really, it was intimidating and disorienting, you know, I mean, kind of, as you said, like, I had a lot of fear of even just asking those questions, you know, of like, what are other guys going to think of me if I start asking these kinds of questions? And what I found out very quickly is that even though I had a lot of fear in kind of bringing those questions to other men, I don't think I met with a single man who, was weirded out or embarrassed or, you know, looked at me strangely because I was asking those kinds of questions. In fact, you know, almost all of them, you know, if they were my age, they were saying, man, I'm wrestling with some of the same things. Or if they were older than me, it was, you know, I understand where you're coming from. I know how big those questions are. And I wrestled with them myself, you know, like those, it was those kinds of answers. And it was just like, gosh, if this is such a, like, a universal thing for guys, like, why is nobody talking about this? You know, like, why is this not out in the open more? But again, you know, kind of like you're saying, there's just sort of this, like, fear and hiddenness to this topic of masculinity. You know, as men, I think we're so afraid to admit that we're uncertain about our manhood, that it makes it really hard to be honest about it. But, you know, once I got past that initial fear and intimidation, then it just became really, really life-giving. I mean, it became great to actually connect with other men at a level that was far more significant than just, you know, talking about the, you know, the latest game that we all watched that week, you know, whatever sport event was happening, you know, or just even, you know, at a more significant level, but just, you know, what's going on with you, with your family, or, you know, like real life events that were happening. Even to get past that and to actually start talking about, like, what's going on with you at a heart level? You know, what's really happening under the hood, so to speak, and where is that playing out in your life? It was good. I don't think I'd ever connected with men like that before, you know, to that point in my life. And so being able to have those kinds of conversations and feel like, man, there's real relationship to be had here. It was deeply moving and transformational for me.
I have so much so much admiration for your younger self, because you know, you were mentioned for like, you know, the early 20s, mid 20s, all of these questions. I know I had questions. They weren't, maybe I had them and I didn't lean into them, but it wasn't much about, you know, being a man. I didn't like that form of inquiry wasn't there. I definitely tail end of college started leaning in on, like, you know, spirituality, Buddhism, reading Eckhart Tolle. But to be honest, when I look back on, like, yeah, there was a deep inquiry there and it was deeply inspired. But what I was unaware of was all my persona was doing was going, oh, fuck, this is so cool, this language. I love these concepts. I can be protected forevermore. And I never have to open to my shame ever again. It's like, yeah. I put this new language. It's like I upgraded my language, but like,
yeah,
base layer, nothing had changed. And right. I remember sort of speaking with guys, but it was like this conceptually thing of like, I have my shit figured, and like, right. Actually total spiritual arrogance. Like, look at you poor bastards, like still not present. And like, you don't know what consciousness is about. You don't know what presence, you know, whatever, all that surrender. I used to bandy about all of these terms, hadn't a fucking clue. And it wasn't like, it literally, I read a lot of stuff, did meditation, you know, of course I do honor myself in those years. I was clearly planting seeds.
Yeah.
But there, my point of having the humility to ask open-hearted, vulnerable questions, that didn't happen till 4 years ago, when it was like, my queen was giving me feedback going, dude, you talk a good talk, but I smell the lack of presence a mile away, and I've done it for 12 years. So I just want to extend, you know, I didn't have the spiritual balls to do what you did in your early 20s, like a real deep admiration. I do now, getting up to speed, and hey, that's my spiritual journey, but high honoring for your younger self and just being able to lead like that.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Yeah. I think as men, you know, kind of the way you're describing your own story there, I think there's a tendency for all of us to just sort of find a new shield to hide behind. You know, it just becomes like, kind of like you're saying, like, I adopted a whole bunch of new language, but, you know, it didn't actually solve or address any of the stuff that was really going on under the surface. And, you know, I think as guys, we can often tend to do that to ourselves. Like, let me just find a new place or a new community or a new language behind which I can feel safe and protected. But, you know, until you address the rot that's on the inside, there's no amount of safety on the outside, you know, that's going to solve your problems. So yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's one part where, I sort of shoot from the hip here, and it's like I honor the observations I've had. I've been in deep men's work about four and a half years at this point on, and it's like raw necessity. I mean, my wife, my kids, the life we created together. I mean, there was a lot of sort of that rot underneath the surface of the persona, and that was there that had to be rooted out. But there was still this beautiful, beautiful existence that we had that was sacred. There was a lot of love there underneath it all. I'm very grateful that we have recovered that, and it's thriving. Yet what I've observed, and I really want to speak it into the space, is like, I just see that so much represented. There's so many guys that take to men's work, and I'd say men's work, spiritual work, deep work, you know, it's like there's a lot of different variations, like personal growth area. And it's just, it's really calling the bullshit on it. And I sort of invite guys listening in to really just listen in to that part, and like, just making sure, like, do you have men in your life that will call you on your bullshit? I just have found it so omnipresent. I can spot it now, honestly, because I was so fucking good at that shit.
Right. Yeah.
I could spin a fucking tail, and it's only since slowly but surely, via the podcast, via incredible mentors that I've met in men's work, and I find there's this incredible power in meeting elders. Guys that, you know, I've had some guys on the podcast here, and you know, the before, the after, the conversation, and there's this radical groundedness in them that with a look, one look, I'm like, fuck, I don't know why, but I feel intimidated by this guy. I feel like I'm almost going flush, because this dude sees through everything. And yeah. and he just will call me on anything with a look. And I'm like, I've really been curious about that. How? With a look. He speaks a couple of sentences and then I'm like, whoa, I'm just instantly more present. I'm respecting this guy. I'm loving this guy. And yet at any given moment, like there is no controlling these guys. They're like, fuck. And I invite guys listening in like to ask, like, do you have men like that
yeah.
in your space where, you know, you can be there talking a great tale, you know, like spinning a great story, minimizing and normalizing like a crappy marriage, you know, seeking sympathy from your best buddies who have sons. We're going to talk about father-son relationships here, but like, you know, it's like, oh, but my son, and you're actually ultimately complaining and bitching, but you sort of wrap it up in the type of language that will gain sympathy. Like,
yeah.
Do you have men in your life that can see through that bullshit a mile away and go, man, you're just fucking bullshitting?
Yeah.
It's not in your son. It's not in your wife. It's not in the business. It's not in the economy. It's not in the government. It's not in fucking anything. It's on you.
Yeah.
Wake the fuck up.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And that's why I started, you know, what I'm doing with Manhood Tribes is just the recognition and acknowledgement that if you're going to be the man that you're actually capable of being, you have to have a tribe of men around you who are going to challenge you and push you to get there. Like you have to have men who know you, know your story, know your world, and can call you out when you're being an idiot and can call you up when they can see you could do better than that. And, you know, I think men for the most part in most cultures throughout history lived that way. And just out of necessity more than anything, just because, you know, societal structure was just kind of shaped like that. And it's really only kind of been in the modern era and later where we have moved away from this kind of close-knit community, especially for men, of the way that our lives overlap with each other. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that we need it less anymore. It means that in order to have it, we're going to have to work harder for it. You know, we have to fight for it. It doesn't happen naturally, but it is still just as necessary for us as men.
Mm. So, Don, my curiosity is, and as you're actually answering, I think, a lot of it. What was it that got you initially to go, okay, you were seeing the benefits yourself, you were seeing your own curiosities, you were reaching out to guys, you were getting that type of, you know, masculine direct challenge and support yeah. yourself. When did you arrive at a point when you're like, I've got to do something about this in the world. I've got yeah. to bring this message out. What did that journey look like?
Yeah, it was fairly early on in that process. You know, I mean, I like, kind of like I said, when I first started kind of getting over the hump of like, I'm not quite so afraid to talk about this with other men anymore. And I started to realize how many men were asking the same questions that I was, it was a pretty natural next step for me to go, somebody needs to do something about this, you know, like, and why not me, you know, why not step in and try to make a difference? And I would say too, so, you know, I come from a faith background. I've, you know, worked in church and ministry settings for a long time. And in that world, the take on manhood is really interesting, but also, like, you know, as confusing as it is in the broader culture, it's equally weak and confusing within the church community. It's, you know, maybe in some different ways, but still really struggles. And especially in America, if you look at just about any church in America, you'll find within the, you know, general attendance of the church, the women are far more connected and involved than the men are. And as a guy at a church, you know, that always really kind of like, that was a struggle and a question mark for me of just kind of like, what is that about? You know, I looked at the person of Jesus and would say, I see in him a man, and really the man who I think is most worth following. But I could tell that the men around me, for the most part, didn't see the same thing that I saw. And, you know, they saw their faith as obligation or duty, or, you know, something that they did because their wives expected them to, or because, you know, they felt like it was good for their kids, or, you know, whatever. And I just felt like something is missing here. And so it was kind of at like multiple levels that I felt like this has been really significant for me. I want to be able to help others. And I just really saw that there was a disconnect within my world, you know, of faith, between masculinity and faith, that I wanted to try to help connect there, you know, to help men be able to see, hey, your manhood really is relevant to your faith. And that's a good thing.
I'd love to share something with you that's highly relevant in my own personal journey. I have shared it before with guys listening in the audience that have been following in. And I actually feel it's this spontaneously beautiful thing. It's like, okay, well, actually my questions about manhood, maybe I wasn't using the word, what it means to be a man. Yeah. But I actually look back, it's beautiful that this is coming up. I'm finding I'm putting on new lenses as I'm listening to you. So I'm really grateful for your, just this entire conversation
makes for a really good conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, as you described the men that you were witnessing in the States, you know, it's like the men weren't so fully involved and sort of that feeling of obligation. Yeah. You got to tick this box Sunday morning, once a week, do the thing, right. Be the good Christian type thing.
Yeah.
I had that feeling, but I had that at like 11.
Yeah,
I was the first in my family, like growing up in Ireland, Roman Catholic Ireland. I mean, you know, devout Roman Catholic Christian, you know, it's like, and there's beautiful things about it. And there's not so beautiful things about it, because there was a lot of, you know, people didn't question it. You just did it. It was like that obligated thing. Right. Like, you know, you should do. Why? Yeah. Or, you know, what have you really questioned about it? I remember just going, man, I'm listening to what this man Jesus, what I've been told by so many people, what he said, and I'm like, fuck, I'm just like, I'm showing up, and I don't feel that his words are being represented by these people that are speaking to him. And it's like, what? I felt this radical disconnect. I'm like, you know, this part of, oh, the kingdom of God lies within you. I'm like, that for me, I remember like 10, 11, it's like, wow, that's I really love that. And like, you know, we all call him, you know, the Son of God. I remember, Don, in primary school. I don't know what it's in the States, like young school, whatever, first school. I remember, you know, religion class and having a deep curiosity. And I remember questioning the teacher, and my classmates used to sort of laugh. And they were sort of like, oh, geez, there he goes again. But I remember just going, there was this one time, Don, and I remember the teacher, still have her face in my mind, and I was like, excuse me, miss, but you know, Jesus is the Son of God, and she's like, yes, you know, sort of with a sympathetic, you're like, oh, you know, here's this sort of, I don't know, forget what age, 9, 10, this young boy, and his curiosity is like, okay, cool, so he's the Son of God. And things got awkward when I posed the second part. It was like, so, and this was like 1 + 1 = 2 for me. You know, that 9, 10-year-old is like, this is just so obvious. It's like, I'm confused, but I just need to clarify. It's like, miss, so he's the Son of God. You agree with that? Yes, Mark. Yeah, you know, all smiles. And I was like, so he's also said that, you know, we're children of God. Yes. And she's smiling, but I think I still remember she had like a question coming to her bracket. Yeah. These aren't a fucking you. I was coming. I was like, so Jesus is like really directly saying, miss, that like I am the same as him and we're all the same as him. And all of a sudden it's like it got awkward. It's like, no, it's sort of like, well, you know, and well, Mark, it's sort of, it's difficult, and just all this blabber of awkwardness came. And I remember, Don, I'm like, here I was as a 9-year-old or 10-year-old, whatever age. And like this, my whole spiritual curiosity laid out there. My heart is there.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm there for the taking. If you want to say like from a numbers perspective, I'm there, you know,
you've got
me, you know, faith based, you've got me. But it's like my heart's curiosity couldn't be received. And the awkwardness, I'm like, this is just weird. I actually love, there's some part of me, I have words now to go like my heart was lit up, inspiration, etc. I didn't have those words back then, but I'm like, I was just wanting some man that could go, hey, hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the same happens me. Anytime I read the good book, anytime I hear, it's like, I'm lit up as well. It's like, oh, wow. I just wanted to share that, because I have since left, if you want to say, left the church as a practicing Christian. Yet, Don, and here's it can seem like a paradox for some people's beliefs. It's like, you know, there's, if you go by tick the box, you know, you got to be showing up on the Sunday to say you're a Christian.
Right, right.
I feel more Christian now than ever before in my life. And yeah. I've just formed my own relationship with Jesus, with what he embodied. And like, I'm moved to tears. Moved to tears at moments like when my mom passed 2 years ago. I was drawing on the inspiration of Jesus on the cross to go, okay, I'm going to bring this, I'm going to go through this myself. Yeah. My mom's going to go through it. So I wanted to be really deeply intimate with you, because you asked me beforehand, you know, the faith-based conversation.
Yeah.
That's my paradigm. And yet I can feel the mess of like generations of men that haven't related with Jesus. And I feel like no matter if it's Jesus, if it's Buddha, if it's whatever, whoever that figurehead is in your tradition or your upbringing, to invite every guy coming in from whatever tradition he's coming in from, I feel we've sort of lost this deep masculine connection with seeing, yeah, they've been reflecting back. We are the same. There's some sameness that if we don't have that connect, of course, we're going to just see it as an obligation. Does that make sense from your perspective?
Yeah. So, you know, I think first, man, hey, thank you for offering your story in that way. There's such power in us as men being able to share honestly about our stories. And, you know, having worked in church and ministry settings for a long time, the story that you're describing, you know, while it's yours and it's personal to you, is I think really similar and familiar to a lot of men. You know, I mean, what you're describing there, you know, is a lot of just vulnerability on your part, even public vulnerability at that age, you know, as a child, to say, I've got real questions about Jesus and about things of faith. And gosh, it has gotten so difficult for men, I think, to be able to get genuine answers to those questions. And so for the most part, we just shut them down, you know, and we write off faith as something that's irrelevant because it doesn't seem to affect a lot of the practical side of our lives. And so, you know, getting those questions answered don't seem like they're all that essential, but, you know, I would say that they absolutely are. Like, I think if we're going to figure out how to be the men that we are supposed to be, we absolutely do have to wrestle with these bigger questions of, you know, I would describe it as allegiance. Like, who is the figurehead, as you're kind of talking about, that's at the epicenter of all things that I really do need to give my allegiance to as a man? Who's the king that I need to follow? You know, to kind of tie it back to the Lord of the Rings a little bit, you know, like, Where does that come from? Because that's such a big part of what's written onto us as men is, you know, is being able to kind of have that kingly figure that we are following and learning to kind of step into his shoes and his footsteps at the same time. So, you know, this could be a, you know, a full length episode by itself, but
I'm feeling like the energy cranking up. Yeah. In myself, I'm like, oh man, I'm fucking on fire here and done. So yeah. I want to presence the realness of the conversation. I like, there again, my spiritual practice and like within my nervous system is like, okay, trust when my heart and soul, heart brain, gut brain, cranial brain are all together going. I mean, that's my soul. And I'm feeling that right now in the moment. I'm quite sure guys listening in are there. The thing that jumps out of me there is like, it's having that figurehead. And then the key part, what you were saying, is like, and then following in the footsteps.
Uh-huh.
And I know that, Don. And I remember I really was deeply inspired, still am, by Buddhist teachings. And I was following a Tibetan Lama, brilliant Lama, like living 30 years in the West. And then he reflected at one point, is like, you know, the teachings on Buddha nature, to bring some crossover, if guys aren't familiar with that perspective, it's sort of like Christ consciousness. That's the sort of Buddhist lingo for Christ consciousness. Like Christ consciousness represented within Jesus, Buddha nature. It's sort of Buddha's language of, you know, what I feel is sort of that same energy, whether people agree with that or not. I feel it's like different ways of describing the same sort of forces within. His observation was like, yeah, he's like, I've been in teaching in the West for years, but it's like everybody loves the teachings up until the point when we start teaching about Buddha nature, and it's like people go awkward.
Yeah.
It's like I want you to actually get You know, and again, it's I just, for me personally, again, you know, I hold my hand up. I'm speaking unapologetically, you know, whatever, guys, if you don't have to agree with everything I say, but I want to model fearlessness of authentic truth coming true and trust my heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, you know, Buddha nature, you know, when I start teaching on Buddha nature and explicitly teaching, it's like, hey, the Buddha's realization was, yes, he was the Buddha, but he realized his Buddha nature within, and his Buddha nature is as good as any human's Buddha nature. And it's like, ultimately, you've just got these sort of karmic, you could say, nervous system traumas, you know, wounds, whatever your paradigm, whatever your wording, you've got these things to overcome. And when you do deep spiritual practice, prayer, meditation, shadow work, whatever, and your obscurations are removed, you are Buddha indeed. He's like, people in the West tend to get really triggered by the simplicity that you've got Buddha nature, which, again, just wanting to keep like a golden thread so everybody listening in is in my language, is like, it's the same thing of, you know, Jesus, you know, he's the Son of God, we're children of God, the kingdom of God is within you. There's a simplicity there. And I love that. That for me is what lights up. It's like when you say, yeah, to have a figurehead to be inspired by, but to follow in the footsteps, it's so key. And I don't know, it's like there's some force field or belief out there that that's just fucking arrogant. How dare you even say that you follow in the footsteps of Jesus and follow it? Yeah, it's okay. Read the book or the books. Yeah. Do the practices. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Christian prays, Buddhist meditates, but don't fucking ever believe that you can follow in footsteps. It's like, don't do shit like that. Don't. It's like there's this invisible story that is like, you can be religious, but don't ever, you know, it's like, don't ever take it so much to heart that you actually can follow in the footsteps.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's what is sad. And honestly, what has made it so difficult for men to connect their masculinity to their faith, you know, is that, and I don't want to get overly critical of kind of the institutional church in this sense, but, you know, seeing it from my setting, like, you know, in ways the church at times has used, you know, if not straight out fear and intimidation, just, you know, control and rules and regulations as a way of trying to make things be simple, but also kind of to, you know, to tell people what the expectations are. And in doing that, I think we rob men of our natural tendency to want to explore and to discover and to adventure and to, you know, just go after things. And what I think is wonderful about Jesus is that he is not afraid of that part of us as men. And in fact, I think even invites that into the way that we would follow him. You know, when he says, come and follow me, there are a lot of things that he asks us to lay down, but I don't think he asks us to lay down our masculinity. You know, he's not telling us we can't be men anymore if we're going to follow him. You know, he didn't in any way lay down his masculinity. I think he fully embodied it. But the church has often, whether they've intended to or not, has often asked men to lay down their masculinity in order to be a part of the church community. And it's no wonder that, you know, that men have a hard time then connecting their faith to their lives, because it can just feel like nothing about me is really valued or needed here except, you know, my presence and maybe occasionally my, you know, financial contributions. And that, you know, who is that motivating for? You know, nobody. So we're off on a wild goose chase here, but, you know, it's great. I think it is really great just to be able to say, hey, faith is an important, and I would even say an essential part of what it means to be a man, because I think that's how we're built as human beings. But I do think as men, we have to relearn how to connect our faith to our masculinity in order for it to be real and fulfilling and you know, help us be the men that we're supposed to be. So
I'm loving this. I was sort of laughing to myself going, well, it, you know, the Lord of the Rings, if if Frodo took three movies or how many, like, to get to the bowels of Mordor. I mean, we're Don and Mark can definitely go radically honest in this conversation. Yeah. But it's like, I bring in the humor, but it's that example, you know, like the carrying out the cross, you know, to carry it with grace. And, you know, it's that metaphorical, symbolical aspect. As I say, like, I'm deeply fucking moved in this, Don. I was about to say I'm surprised. No, I'm not surprised. I knew from you reaching out, it's beautiful for me. It's very healing for me to be having this with with a man like yourself, dude, actually brings Jesus front and center in a faith-based way. It's very healing for me.
Thank you.
Of finding words to go, okay, I can go there with Don. I actually have a beautiful, one of my best friends, met him in Deep Men's work, Carlos, devout Christian. Like, he visited it here and it was like, you know, it was just for 3 days, but it was like front and center, Mark, Sunday morning, just, I'd really love to get to church when I'm visiting Ireland, you know, beautiful church. And we have so much, like, our conversations are deeply spiritual based, and boy, we fucking go there. It's like in ways and terms that, like, would be blasphemous in so many different terms of, like, you know, sexuality in the church. And, you know, I'm fully expecting that you could and would go there, but let's keep it. It's just a really beautiful thing. I know I love the way you're saying, hey, just drawing this thing of, like, how men, didn't use the word alienated, but it's like, you know, almost like we're ticking the box in the relationship with our religious things of, like, almost the same things with our family. It's like, fuck yeah, sure, I pay the donations and I do the thing and I keep the thing practically ticking, but where's my heart and soul in this relationship? Where's my truth? I've got a truth. Jesus questioned at some point in his human existence. I've questions. Are you ready? It's almost like, are you ready for the conversation, guys? Are you ready? You know, Don and Mark do it, but hey, we've this container and, like, we go there, but are you ready for my fullness? I really want guys listening in, Don, this is sort of, well, it's a unique topic that we're doing, but I really, one of the most important aspects for me in this podcast is, like, yeah, be the husband she brags about, you know, it's marriage based. Guys come with, I want to sort out my marriage. It's sort of shit. You know, ultimately it's like, I don't know how to get there. There's lots of love.
Yeah.
I love this conversation because from the deepest masculine and feminine teachings, and it's actually coming where I typically mention, just through autobiographical sort of, in the tapestry of my life, Christian example through Jesus and Buddhist teachings, they're the predominant ones, but Hindu teachings, ancient teachings of masculine feminine dynamics go really deep into the woman, the feminine pole in the relationship is the goddess energy, and her entire force, like that untamable, unboxable sort of universal energy that she represents, which is the feminine. It's like the metaphor is like the storm or the ocean, which, funnily enough, Jesus, the feminine, the storm on the sea, just for making that note.
Yeah.
It's confronting the feminine, the untamable, unboxable nature of the universe. But it's her, the dance is, she brings that to bring the masculine pole, the male, the man in the relationship, and masculine, feminine, doesn't matter, same sex relationships, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, it's all inclusive. It's to bring him into consciousness, into embodied godliness. And it's like, I just love that. It's like, it's so essential, you know, to reconnect with, you know, as you said, that figurehead. Who is that figurehead that I can embody fearlessly, speak to it, get down in the dojo in conversations, get a tribe around me? We speak about this deep spiritual practice in Heroic Husbands men's circles, and guys love that. It's like all inclusive, fucking go there. Just like, there's no, it's uncensored. The amount of energy that comes from that when guys can just identify that they're love.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're love. Yeah. Oh, fuck. In this space, you can say, I'm love? Dude, You know, it's like you're going to get way more high fives than saying, oh, I'm a Man United supporter. You know, it's like, or I'm a whatever your local sports team. And I honor the sports and I honor that stuff. But there's certain simple tick the boxes in modern society where, yeah, you know, your political, religious, sporting allegiance, you know, you're going to know when you go into a certain space how you can get your attachment needs. But there's something deeper needed. And transforming your marriage, you're going to need the biggest, most infinite source of energy available, love or God or whatever you need to take that on and have your queen where she can feel completely safe in your presence. So it's definitely like front and center. A faith based conversation is absolutely necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed wholeheartedly. You said it really well.
Don, I'm looking at the time. I'm like, we're here.
Yeah.
But I think I absolutely trust intuitively we've set a ferociously open and fearless basis in the conversation for what's actually coming next. Because if we're not willing to go there as men, as dads, how the fuck can we guide our sons there? So assuming that the men listening in as dads, you know, we've ruffled up the nervous systems. It's radically open-minded. Some guys have clicked off going, fuck Don, fuck Mark. That's okay. Not many have. I know guys, the more ferocious and direct, the better to really give the feedback and the love. My feedback is, you know, episodes with guests like yourself, Don, that just go there. Guys just love the honesty of it. You're here to talk about how to help your son become a man. So guys, let's assume they're taking inspiration. The faith-based conversation is going. They're sort of like, there's a spiritual growl and a fire and a sort of a permission to feel, yeah, fuck yeah. So the fuck yes, the spiritual fuck yeah is in their nervous system now. Now they're looking at their sons going, yeah, but I'm only getting up to speed with, you know, reawakening my spiritual fire. How are men listening in who have the sacred age-old role of being a father to a son or sons? What's the art? What's the process, Don, of taking that son coming of age? What steps does a man have to bring his son through to support him making that hero's journey transition from boyhood to manhood?
Yeah, that's great. I love the way you even kind of phrased it there at the end. Because here's the thing, you know, as is true with the hero's journey, I think this story of helping your son become a man is it's written on us already. Like it really is far more intuitive than we think it is. We've allowed the very confusing narratives of our current day and age to make this a confusing process, but I really don't think it is. You know, I mean, if you look at just history and culture, you know, and just about all places throughout history, I mean, you know, we're talking about 50% of the world's population needing to go from boyhood to manhood. And for the most part, we've done it pretty successfully over the course of time. So it can't really be all that difficult. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not as confusing, I think, as we're trying to make it today. So, you know, I would say, in the way that, you know, as you ask, kind of like, what are the steps? What are the things that you need to be able to help your son become a man? I think it's three just really, really basic things. The first is that you need to be able to give him a clear vision of what it means to be a man. Okay, so just plain and simple, what is a man? You need to be able to tell your son and show your son and demonstrate to your son, this is what manhood looks like. The second is that he needs opportunities to practice being a man. Okay, so if the first one is more vision, you know, more head and heart, the second one is more body. Like he needs to actually put the shoes on, you know, like try out being a man, see where and how it fits. And, you know, and the places where it's confusing and it's not quite working, that you're there as a dad to be able to help encourage him along and push him to try a little harder and, you know, take a different angle or approach at it. But he needs opportunities to practice being a man. And then the third one, and probably the most important, but you really can't have the third one without the first two. But the third one is that he needs a dedicated season to advance from boyhood to manhood. And this is kind of the idea of what, you know, has been present in many societies throughout history. It's just this idea of a rite of passage, that a boy needs a time where he goes through a process from being a boy into being invited and welcomed into the community of men around him. And he is, you know, acknowledged and accepted as a man by other men. So yeah, you know, again, like, it's not rocket science, you know, it's not that hard to, I think, kind of understand. And even as I, you know, kind of walk through the steps, I think probably most guys listening are going like, well, that's not so complicated, but because it isn't, you know, but it's just, they aren't things that happen naturally in our culture anymore. And so as dads, we have to take some real initiating steps to kind of make them happen. But they aren't all that difficult or complicated to be able to do. It just takes some intentionality.
I always speak to rational mind. I think so many guys, we self-declare, it's quite limiting, but most guys have like our rational mind, modern culture.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the great problem-solving part of the intellect. It's head-led, cranial brain, et cetera, et cetera. Rational mind is like three steps. So there's vision of what it means to be a man, and opportunities to practice. You're saying that's the body, and then the dedicated season is rite of passage, initiation.
Yeah.
So guys are leaning in. You have the fathers thinking of their beloved sons and going, okay, I want that to seem simple, but
yeah,
fuck, you know, it's like there's a lot of shit going down in modern culture that is the opposite of the simplicity of what you're speaking to, Don.
Right.
You know, it's like there's a ton of social media, there's a ton of like media in general, and it's not just the modern media, it's like it's been bombarding with aspects of pretty much everything that's not about true spiritual manliness, masculine practice, etc. What in your experience have been sort of ideas, or can you speak to men that have the full willingness, they're at this hell yes, oh man, I'm seeking this, I'm wanting this for my son, in the first part of that setting the vision of what it means to be a man, what practical advice or guidance would you have for guys that are on the edge of their seat wanting to listen?
Yeah. So I would, I'll make a long story into, you know, something short, but in my own just kind of research and asking questions of other men, you know, what I feel like I kind of arrived at in terms of a clear vision of what it means to be a man is what I call the five marks of manhood. So if you look again, just kind of, you know, throughout history at different cultures, you would see these things kind of crop up whenever you're looking at manhood. There's lots of different ways that people have tried to define or, you know, put some terms around manhood. I try to avoid things like roles or virtues, because I think those change from one history or one culture to another. But these, what I call marks of manhood, which are more kind of just like traits, are almost always present when you're looking at men. So, you know, again, I'm not trying to just overly tease it, so I'll walk through it. The five marks of manhood, as kind of I see them, are strength, courage, skill, honor, and allegiance. So one more time, strength, courage, skill, honor, and allegiance. And so I would say these are the things that every man needs to cultivate in his life in order to demonstrate his masculinity. These things need to be true of all men. And one of the things that I think is really great about them is you can get better at each one. You know, none of them are like, hey, you're either born with this or you're not, or, you know, like wherever you're at today, you're sort of stuck with what you got. No, every one of them can be cultivated. So all of us are capable of getting better at being a man. And these five marks of manhood kind of are what allow us to be able to do that. So I think if you can talk through those things with your son, you know, it's kind of that a clear vision of what it means to be a man. And we can go into those more in depth if you want to. But then the second part is just, you know, he needs opportunities to practice being a man. And so I think you just take those things and you say, you know, with your son, like, let's work on getting better at each one of these. I've done this with my sons in a way where we have designed what I call manhood challenges. And so what we do is we take one of those marks of manhood and just say, hey, we need to get better at strength. And so let's create a manhood challenge for ourselves to get better in this area. And so a simple one that I've done with both of my sons is we're going to measure ourselves today on how many push-ups we can do in 60 seconds. And, you know, write that number down. And then for the next month, we're just going to work on that, do the same kind of thing, work on pushups 2 to 3 times a week. And then at the end of the month, you know, remeasure ourselves, see where we're at. And especially for young boys, I think that's such a great challenge, because they begin to see, hey, with just a little bit of effort and consistency, I actually can grow and get better. You know, almost everybody, other than, you know, Olympic level athletes or bodybuilders or, you know, whoever, who have kind of maxed out their physical strength. Almost everybody can get better at that challenge really quickly, you know, with very little effort and cost and, you know, equipment needed. Because of that, it helps us, and especially it helps boys be able to see, hey, this is a place where I can get better as a man. I can actually push myself and grow in this area. So you can do that with all five of the marks of manhood, you know, designing different challenges around those things to help you be able to get better at each one. But those are some just really easy, you know, basic ways to be able to say, here's a simple framework. Here's how you can apply it to be able to help your son, you know, practice at these things.
I'm loving the, is it even a word? Implementability? I think that's the most good. Okay, well.
We'll go with it, whether it is or not.
Going. It makes sense to me. You know what I'm talking about. Implementability. The ability to implement, for any English teachers or professors have a way better grasp of the English language than I. I love the practical nature of it. So you have the vision, and what I'm picking up is there's a natural flow. So you set the vision, and then opportunities to practice, which you would link that in. I know it's like in organizational behavioral psychology, would say there's lead measures and lag measures. That's one form. It's almost like, okay, the vision, that's the goal. Who I want to ultimately become, you know, rough picture of that, or as much clarity as you can. That's the man. And then the opportunities to practice is, okay, we'll get to work. The lead measures, if you keep showing up in this with a little bit of effort, with multiplied by consistency over time. I really love that. Strength, courage, skill, honor, and allegiance. I want to keep it super practical with guys, because I feel the simplicity of it, I think there's a lot of guys could, the simplicity lends itself to, I feel every guy intuitively could go, fuck yeah, that's simple. I can intuitively go there. But a bit like the push-ups, what other ideas? If we go through them one by one, like starting with strength, opportunities to practice. In my mind, immediately, Don, it's like, maybe it's ignorance, but like the go-to is sport. Strength, sport, competition, etc. I think a lot of guys would be there. That might be the obvious one, or like the push-ups, that physical strength. But what are the blind spot opportunities that maybe guys mightn't initially think of that could sort of surprise them, that could come under strength?
Yeah. So, you know, there could be just, you know, simple things like during your day, you know, setting yourself a strength challenge to, you know, always take the stairs instead of taking the elevator, or, you know, for you guys, taking the lift, you know, like just creating ways to kind of push yourself to say, I'm going to work on, you know, this aspect of me. And part of how I'm challenging myself is to use my strength, even though my day may not physically demand it. You know, I as a man am going to push myself to embody and use my body, whether or not it's being, you know, physically demanded of me each and every day. So, you know, taking the stairs, you know, another simple one is, and you see this in all kinds of research these days, this is obviously more for us as adults than for our kids. But just, you know, learning to be able to get up off the ground without using your hands. You know, just like, do you have the nimbleness and the strength to be able to push your body up? And in all kinds of research, that's showing things like, if you can do that, you are less prone to falling when you're elderly. You know, like you're just keeping your body primed for physical use. And, you know, we could go down a long conversation about like how important strength is to like physical health, but especially how important it is to just masculinity in general. But, you know, I would say like those are some just like kind of easy ones, maybe that are outside of the realm of like, you know, we're not just talking about competitive sports here. We're talking about keeping your body in shape so that it can be of use to the people and the world around you. That's really what strength is all about from a masculine standpoint, you know, is that my body is built for strength. And so I need to keep it in a state where it is capable of being useful to the world around me.
I love that. Oh, it's like, get in the arena. I love the practical. Yeah. Did you actually, I'm fucking laughing here going, well, I actually bring this up, but I want to bring it up because a part of my practice is, if I feel a pang of fear to a massive fear of saying something, my practice is to say it anyway. Yeah. Don, I want to clarify. Did you say that the part of the challenge is working towards getting up off the floor without using your arms?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I have this like inner child part. I'm going to do this live.
Okay.
I'm, I just have it. I'm like, guys, I've never heard of it. I my previous job was like working as a physio, and I never actually heard that. And that's just wonderful. And I've no idea. I'm going to try and keep the headset on. Let's do this live. This is, and if I fall and break myself up, we can we can record later on.
Great.
I might have to. Oh, come on. I'm going to bring this box over. Give me one second, guys. This is live. This is Mark Usher willing to put his name, his good name and strength on the line here.
Give it your best effort. Yeah.
I literally have no fucking idea if I can do this, which is good. This is good. I want to keep my microphone on, but if you could see the tangle of leads, which are always fine when I'm just in front, but I did not come on expecting to do this. Anyway, let's keep going. So I have, and even Don is not seeing me here, I have shifted my ass to the right of my computer screen. So what? Give me some, is it just like literally hold my elbows, hands, and just try and get my, lie on the floor and get my ass up?
Yeah, so you don't have to start from a lying position, but you can start from, you know, just a sitting position on the floor. And if you can stand up, the big goal is to be able to stand up without using hands, elbows, or knees. You're really just, you know, all you've got is your feet and your hips, you know, to be able to kind of move yourself and stand up.
I'm sitting, legs flat on the floor. I'm holding my elbows. I'm going to hold them tucked straight in. Moment of truth. I'm like, I'm laughing down because I have some arrogance going, I will be able to do it. But I'm here sitting going, you're feeling way more vulnerable right now in this moment of time. there's a reason why I don't take video recordings.
Yeah, this is great.
It's for moments like this. Okay, so here it goes. I'm literally part of my brain going, make this seamless. You know, guys are listening in.
Yeah.
Guys in Heroic Husband's Men's Circle, they're going to delete their membership from tomorrow on if you can't.
You're going to hear about it one way or another.
Yeah. Fucking business is going to be gone straight overnight. Ugh. Okay. Cool. I'm playful. I'm actually relieved. I can do that. And it was quite easy.
There you go.
Yay. Nice job. Feeling good. Just had to bring it live. Inner child needed.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, you know, I mean, you say inner child, but kids have no problem doing that at all. And it's partially because kids spend a whole lot of time on the floor, period. And most adults do not. You know, we sit most of the day in a chair. We rarely sit and move around on the floor. And because of that, we lose a lot of our mobility and our, you know, just kind of functionality in our bodies. And as we get old, you know, the studies are showing like that it makes us more prone to falling because we don't have as much control over our body in space as we did when we were young. So, you know, it's a great test of just like working on your own strength there. And, you know, if you can't do it at all, like you work on like, you know, bits and pieces, like if I can't get up off the floor without using my hands, then, you know, maybe you're working towards like the next step is get up off the floor using just one hand. Or if you can do it with your hands, but you need your knees, you know, you need to kind of rock up onto your knees and then push up. Hey, that's great. You know, work towards that, but just kind of whatever you're like, you know, your next step or your progression is, it's just working on developing your strength. How are you keeping your body in condition as a man to be able to be useful and helpful to the world around you?
Beautiful. Moving on to number two. I'm really curious about number two, because I think number one, it's super cool. I wasn't expecting that. And as an example, I think strength guys could possibly get there quicker, but courage is a really potent one. And I don't think so many guys would have immediate ideas as to what that might look like from a challenge perspective.
Yeah. So courage is really just about facing your fears and attempting to overcome them. So, you know, in some ways, you know, you might need a courage challenge to actually just be honest about what your fears are. You know, have the courage to, like we talked about earlier, bring to light the things that you're actually afraid of. You know, talk about it with somebody, just be honest about the fact that this is a place where I'm afraid, where I don't like to admit that I don't know what to do here, or I don't know how to handle this situation, or I avoid this, you know, particular relationship, or I avoid going to the auto mechanic, or, you know, just like whatever, like any of those kinds of things that we as men tend to let ourselves be afraid of. Courage is about saying, hey, there's no such thing as having no fears, right? No person is really without fear. I guess you could be if you're, you want to get into, like, you know, psychopathology, but, you know, that becomes a problem. But the general human state is that we all have fear. And courage is just saying, I'm not trying to get away from my fears. I'm trying to figure out how to face them and work on overcoming them. So, you know, that could just be like I said, it could be being honest about what your fears are in the first place, or you may know what they are. And then it just means like designing a challenge to help you, you know, be able to face that. Maybe it's something like, you've got a difficult relationship with your boss at work. And there's this one particular thing that you just know, like, if I have this kind of conversation with him or with her, it's going to go south. And so a courage challenge would be figuring out, like, how do you have that conversation? Like, you need to put yourself in a place where you've got to have the conversation that you're avoiding. And you need to, you know, maybe it's talking to a friend or a counselor who's going to help you kind of map out what that conversation could look like, what you need to do or what you need to say, how you need to, you know, set the space for it, all those kinds of things. But it's creating the, you know, the atmosphere to be able to actually do the thing that you're afraid of. I think as it relates to marriage, you know, in particular here with your podcast listeners, there's lots of room for courage challenges as it relates to marriage. You know, we as guys avoid the hard places in our marriage, like there's a plague there, you know, because we are often way more interested in just keeping the peace than in actually addressing the things that we know are problems. And so, you know, a courage challenge in marriage could be just saying, I'm going to pick that fight that I've been avoiding, you know, but, and I know it's going to be a fight. I know it's going to be bad, but if we don't address this issue in our marriage, we don't stand a chance of moving forward with health. And so courage is just saying, hey, it's going to take some conflict in order to get to health. And I'm going to be the guy who's willing to have the courage to initiate the conflict, because what I really want is the health on the other side of it.
Yeah, it's a potent example within the marriage arena. And like the flip side is, and I feel that's why it's so potent to bring that as an embodied example to our sons, is life gets infinitely easier. I was fear avoidant of life, actually, yeah. Not fear avoidant of conflict. It was a conflict with life. Yeah. I wouldn't take on anything. Like what I did, like that playful thing, getting up off the floor, there's a protective pathway in my nervous system. Is like, you're going to look fucking stupid. Yeah. It's like protective.
Right.
Really, it's like I, on a level of conscious, like I knew I could do it. I've been thankfully doing yoga recently. I took it on. It's like, but there was that there. It's like, it's there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, everything gets easier. The last 4 or 5 years for me in my life has been a revelation, Don. Total revelation. Up until then, like, fucking cowardly. Like, a coward. Actually, if you wanted to put a label, I know, like, some trauma-informed people say, oh, don't call yourself a coward. It's like, not me, but definitely my persona. You know, Carl Jung, the healing only starts when you can bring distance in the psyche. Uh-huh. You know, not me, but my persona, dude. That was like cowardice left, right, and center. Just avoid the flame of life. Avoid. And the revelatory thing is, like in marriage, is when I have the courage to go there, and I just go there by default, my queen relaxes. She can hold space for anything. Yeah. Even the most radically, like, that's just fucking sexually weird, dude. How? Where? Were they like, where'd you bring that from? That's dark. She's like fine with me going, yeah, I'm not going to say yeah to that, but I'm fine with you bringing it. Because courage. I really get it. It makes it paradoxically so easy. I love, and I reflect, and I imagine this is consciously done. Like, there was part of me asking the question, like, for practical examples for what sons could do. You're bringing in like a lot of adult challenges of how
absolutely.
We can do, which I love that, because like I you know, guys listening in, it's like, I know my queen, she's done so much work with horses, and she's like, you know, these owners would come and go, oh, you know, can you fix my horse? And it's just your example is bringing it up for me. You know, now she would always say to them, and most clients didn't like to hear it. It's like, I'm not here to fix the horse. I'm here to support you actually working with this horse that can bring out his natural brilliance.
You're
getting in the way. So it's like, you know, guys, you're not listening in. You don't get like a free pass here where, you know, Don is giving you a paradigm to go, you know, this is how you force, you know, it's like those examples. I don't know if you see this, but you know, the example of like the, the parent that, yeah, there's loving intention, but they're fear avoiding themselves. And it's like, hey, you need to go up and order, you know, for your own meal. When in actual fact, yeah, they're just hiding from, they fucking find it awkward from childhood. They don't like socially engaging, and they push their child forward saying, yeah, I'm just parenting good. No, you're bullshitting yourself. Your child knows you never fucking do that. You've never modeled it. So they don't know how to do it. Now you're pushing them forward. Just bring the elephant in the room, Ash. I love your...
That's perfect, man. And that's such a... I mean, even as you're asking, you know, about like examples for, you know, for kids, that example of like, you know, having a kid order their own meal, I think that's a great courage challenge for a kid, you know, especially for sons at the age where we're trying to teach them a little more independence. You know, that's a fantastic courage challenge. But, you know, here's the thing. These are 5 marks of manhood. They're not just for young men. They're for men at all ages. And so, yes, like we've got to be paying attention to them for ourselves as well, to know, where do I need to grow as a man? You know, where do I need to be getting better? And if I'm giving my kid a courage challenge that I'm not willing to do myself, you know, then, hey, red flags, buddy, you know, it's time to man up and face the fact that, like, hey, you've got some growing to do as well. And not only will it help you, but it will help your son. You know, if your son is seeing you face your own challenges as a man and be able to overcome them, that's only going to be more motivating and encouraging for him, you know, and give him an inspiring example of manhood that he actually wants to move towards. And that's what the goal is anyway.
I might be oversimplifying it. There's some outrageous assumptions I could be making. I have an intuitive thing on skill. It's like upskill from bushcraft to skills, could be around the cars, to skills in life.
Yeah.
Are there any blind spots there, or do guys intuitively have? I have a part of me going, honor and allegiance, I don't have this intuitive grasp.
Yeah.
Is it fair enough that skill guys might get there by themselves, upskilling, finding, you know, challenges where you need to skill, like...
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. Skill is the easiest one to understand. And yes, especially for our sons, you know, they're at the age where, you know, as men, like, I think we're for the most part still called upon by our culture to kind of be a jack of all trades. You know, like we've just got to know how to do a lot of things. And that's okay. That's not bad. Men need to be depended on. And this age for our sons, when they're kind of trying to move into manhood, is a great time to be teaching them skills that they're going to need for just navigating adulthood, you know, how to show up and be able to do things. And not that they need to know how to do everything, but they've at least done enough things that they start to feel like, yeah, I have something to offer, or I could try something here, even though I don't know exactly what to do. You know, that's kind of what we're after when it comes to skill, is that you've got enough kind of settled confidence to be able to say, I can step into this situation and do something, even if I don't know exactly the right way to do it.
I posed a question to you, and yet there was an elephant in the room in my own mind that I'd love to bring forward to you guys from the work that I'm doing, is the skill set of deep intimate relating, masculine, feminine. You know, guys listening in, it's like, actually open up that conversation. I know myself, it's like, fuck, like, I love my dad, amazing man, 10 out of 10 love and intentionality, an absolute hero in my life. Never once was there a conversation about sex, how to relate with a woman. You know, that was never there. So it's like, bring that as a skill set. Hey, this is, here, son, this is how you communicate. This is what I've learned. I'm no expert, but what I've learned works, and what I've, you know, learned how does not work. There's a skill set. It's a skill set to bring that forward in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When, you know, I was kind of talking a little bit ago about the whole rite of passage idea. I've done a rite of passage program with both. I've got 2 teenage boys, and I've done it with both of them. And in that program, we actually do a whole session on how to love a woman well. You know, like, what does it look like to relate to another woman? What are the good ways of doing that and the not so good ways of doing that? Because you're right, it is a skill set. It is something that you need to learn, and you need people to model that to you in order to be able to do it well. Most of us get one model of that, maybe, you know, with our dads, and sometimes that's enough, but probably for most of us it isn't. You know, we pick up the flaws in our dad as much as we pick up the strengths. And so, you know, we need to be hearing from other men. How do you relate to a woman well, in order to be able to handle that skill in our lives? Cause it's an important one.
Moving on to number 4, I am really curious about this.
So if skill is the easiest one to understand, honor is probably the hardest. So honor, I think the reason that it's the hardest is because the way that I use the word honor is really different than kind of how we use it in our Western culture today. So it's not so much about like we kind of use honor in the same way that we use the word integrity, you know, being kind of like a man of upstanding character. And I'm using it more in the sense of kind of like an older definition. And I think even some of the ways that it gets used in other cultures in the world today too, where honor is really about doing right by your peers. So it's kind of this idea of like upholding a shared set of values with the men around you. So when we talk about honor, it means that like your honor is an inherently relational mark of manhood. So you can't have honor unless you have a group of relationships around you. And the reason for that is that you, in order to receive honor, you have to be upholding something in common with these other people that they say, yeah, you're worthy of our honor because you're living the way that we think is honorable. And, you know, that's why it's inherently relational. You can't do it on your own. But here's also the thing about honor is that, you know, in using it this way, it is a morally neutral kind of thing. So, you know, in our culture, we almost exclusively think of honor as being something good, but the way I'm using it is actually morally neutral. It depends on what the people around you consider to be honorable as to whether or not, you know, you're being honored for things that are good. So, you know, this is why, especially at this age with our sons, it becomes so important to be able to talk to them about the value of choosing really good friends, because you are going to tend to take on the attributes and the behaviors of the friends around you, especially at this, you know, kind of like early adolescent stage where boys are starting to try to move into manhood. You know, the reality of peer pressure is strong, and you're going to tend to, you know, want to earn that honor of your peers by doing the things and saying the things and acting the ways that they're acting. And sometimes that's going to be good, and sometimes it's not. Now, you might be high on the honor scale because you're acting and doing and talking a lot like them, but that isn't necessarily always a good thing. Like, you could be doing some things that really aren't good, but you're still earning their favor because of it, because that's what they consider to be valuable. So honor, you know, is really just all about earning the favor and the worth of the people around you by upholding that kind of shared set of values. So, you know, as men, as adult men, then honor becomes crucially important to being the best men that we possibly can be. If we want to continue growing and getting better as men, we have to surround ourselves with men who are going to honor the things that we consider worth pursuing and are going to actually help us pursue those things. You know, that's what honor is going to look like, that, hey, we've got a better vision of what we want to become, and we're challenging each other to get there. And honor means, yeah, I see you doing the work. I see you putting in the effort and, you know, trying to be better as a man than you were before today. So, yeah.
I'm deeply moved in this moment when you bring that as a definition of honor.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, we all naturally seek that, whether you like it or not. And like, it's like, you know, it's so many parents, it's like, oh, for God's sake, you know, he's begun hanging out with X, Y, and Z. And we frown upon the group, but it's like, I just feeling into, you know, your work, with Manhood Tribes is like, consciously support your son in finding a tribe of like-minded, like-hearted, yeah, you know, yeah, boys, yeah, becoming men with their dads, with the community, you know, so that that natural impulse to seek out honor and, you know, be recognized in the group, hey, that's honorable, but yeah, it's honorable within this group that is going to, you know, support you in your spiritual endeavor in life and becoming a great man and, you know, yeah, bringing your gift, feeling loved, bring your love and message to the world.
Right.
Yeah, that definition really dropped me in. Don, I just want to touch base with you. I normally keep these in. I don't edit stuff out very rarely. Are you good time-wise? I've been like, this is like an absolute fucking tsunami, but we're coming in two minutes. Do you have a few minutes to come into landing? How's your timing?
Yeah, yeah, I'm good. I've probably got 10 to 15 more minutes. So I'm good.
We'll rock. We'll come in sweetly, but just want to touch base. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Just want to say to guys listening in, you know, rip roaring ride. I know you're listening in. You're feeling it, but full appreciation. Thank you, Don, for being flexible. Number five, Don, allegiance.
Yeah.
It's another one like honor. I'm really curious about this. I don't want to, there's some premature conclusions I might come to, but
right.
I'm open-hearted, open-minded, beginner's mindset. What's allegiance mean?
Yeah. So honor and allegiance are the two traits that are inherently relational. You have to be in relationship in order to be able to live out those marks of manhood. And if honor is about kind of our, what I would call horizontal relationships, like our peer relationships, allegiance is really about the vertical relationships. It is about it's just recognizing the fact that all men are going to be followers of someone at different points in their lives, you know, for different reasons, but we all are going to follow someone or something, and learning to navigate that allegiance, you know, who we are giving our allegiance to, learning to navigate those relationships is of crucial importance because, and here, this is why this is a mark of manhood. Historically and traditionally, and I would say in a lot of ways, this is still true today, even though, you know, our gender roles and norms are, you know, becoming more fluid in Western culture. It is still largely true that a man's allegiance is very often going to dictate not only what his life looks like, but also the lives of others around him. So typically that's going to be your wife and your kids, you know, your family. But it can be broader than that, you know, your extended family, your community, your allegiance, you know, who and what you are choosing to follow is going to affect the people around you, even in the ways that they may be giving their allegiance. So, you know, that can look like anything and everything from, you know, I call it immediate allegiance, which is, you know, like the people that you're kind of in immediate authority under. As a man, that's almost always, you know, your boss in a work setting. But it can also be like, if you're in a religious background, it can be like a pastor, you know, or your religious leader that you're choosing to be in authority under. It can look like, just being allegiant to your government and, you know, local law enforcement and all that kind of stuff. It can also be, and this is where allegiance gets interesting, not just like this immediate allegiance of like who's actually making decisions that kind of affects your day-to-day life. It can be to things that I would call like the big influences in your life. So this could be things like politics, like finances, even like sports, sports culture, in the sense that if I have given myself over to that thing in some ways that it is dictating my schedule or my choices or my finances or, you know, any of those kinds of things, then it has some of my allegiance. I am not able to be loyal and devoted to other things in my life because this thing has some claim on me. And some of those things can be, you know, fine and good. And then there's other things that could be like pornography and sexuality, any kind of addiction, you know, drugs, alcohol, whatever. All of those things can fall into that allegiance category because they have a control on us that we can't break free from. And it forces us to give ourselves over to that thing in some ways that we're not free to give ourselves over in other, what might be, you know, better places. So you've got immediate allegiance, you know, that's like your boss, or if, you know, dealing with our sons, that's like, you know, parents, teachers, coaches, you know, any of those kind of authority figures in their lives. But then for all of us, you know, sons and dads alike, young and old, I think allegiance also includes kind of an ultimate allegiance category, which is, you know, as we've talked a lot about already, who is the God, or, you know, what is kind of the code that you are really kind of giving the whole of your life over to, you know, that really is meant to sort of influence the way you make all decisions. You know, at the end of the day, this is how I want my life to matter. This is, you know, the way that I'm going to live and factor things in. This is the lens that I'm kind of looking at all of my life through. That's what ultimate allegiance is all about. So all men, whether we want to or not, are going to have to learn how to navigate those things in our lives. And when, as we're navigating them, it's going to affect the other people in our lives as well. So being able to handle our allegiance well is a really important part of being a man, not only because of how it affects us, but because of how it affects the people around us that we really care about.
What a topic. I mean, what a core topic. When you speak to it like that, there's like this radical awareness inside of myself. And I go back and, you know, it's a good number of years now, but I know myself, my allegiance were, I was like the good citizen. Uh-huh. It was like, go by the rules. We started unschooling our girls, but my queen would say, it's like, yeah, it took me longer than herself to feel into it because it was like this allegiance of, yeah, but I had a good upbringing, you know, I had good schooling, you know, it's like questioning the allegiance to an idea. And bit by bit, you know, spiritually, religiously, you know, governmentally, I query that. I was, you know, working as a physiotherapist, and allegiance to this idea of the biomedical model. I could speak for hours, if not days, on the dangers of such an allegiance. And it's one thing. I just love that as an idea of part of that process of becoming a man is becoming conscious and questioning, you know, where do my allegiances lie, and what's like, why unconsciously, like, you know, it's like, why the hell am I so passionate about that football team? Oh, it's
right,
just because
right,
it's just because my dad is the only way. I'm speaking to a guy recently. It was like it's the only way he can relate with his dad, and like, he's 24/7, he spends a ton of money. He's like, ultimately he couldn't give a fuck. He's like, it's only because he doesn't know how to speak about anything else. And it was like, have you ever spoke to your dad? And he had a challenge, he went and he spoke with his dad, and he's like, Mark, I'm looking at like 20 years of following that sports team, going, I didn't need to do any of it. It was allegiance. So bringing, again, this golden thread in this entire conversation, Don, is like that fearlessness to question open-heartedly with a beginner's mindset, you know, the fabric of your existence. Because when you do that, I suppose that's actually a core trait of being a man. Don, wow. I'm like, how you've set the vision, then the opportunities to practice. I think already guys have immense amount to go through. I have a feeling that I'm like, we're not going to do it fullest justice. I don't want to do a rushed conversation on the dedicated season.
Yeah,
it's probably an episode by itself. Yet coming into landing, I do know, well, the whole lot of this process. What is it that your company does to support men in bringing their sons through that dedicated season?
Like,
just put it out there effectively. You know, like, where can guys find you online, and what does that represent? And just a brief idea what they can sort of expect, what the dedicated season is about.
Yeah, that's great. So I have created a program that's called First Tribe. It's a 9-month rite of passage program for dads with what here in the US we would call middle school sons. So that's probably ages about like 11 to 15, you know, kind of whatever that would be equivalent for you guys in the UK or in Ireland. And, you know, just trying to sort of say, like, in that pre-adolescent, early adolescent stage where a young man is really hungering after manhood, how can we step in during that season and do some intentional things to both invite him into the community of men, but then acknowledge and champion him for arriving there, you know, being able to validate him as a man and welcome him into that community. It is meant to be done as a group of dads and sons. So that's why it's called First Tribe. We hope it is your son's probably first tribe experience with other men, but that it certainly shouldn't be his last. But we believe that, you know, manhood is best done in a community of other men. And so we want to give him that experience right off the bat as well. We go through all of these things, the 5 marks of manhood. We create manhood challenges. You get like a monthly gathering that you do together as your group of dads and sons. And then in between those monthly gatherings, there's things for you to do with just you and your son, whether that's a manhood challenge, or we do some movie night things where we, you know, watch movies and talk about kind of the themes and the masculine characters that we see in those movies and you know, how that teaches us about being a man. There's all kinds of just great, fun things to be able to do together. But it is an amazing experience for building quality time and quality relationship with your son and helping him, you know, be able to have that clear vision of what it is that he's stepping into and how to be able to get there. So that, you know, in and of itself, like, I know that idea of that kind of rite of passage thing, I think for most men, most dads, is pretty intimidating, you know, of just kind of like, hey, if I were to try to do this for my son, I wouldn't have a clue where to get started. You know, like, we don't have those rites of passage built into our society anymore. So it's not just something that happens. And so for guys to have to kind of like from scratch, come up with what to do for their son, is an almost impossible task. And so that's where we really wanted to kind of come alongside dads and just say, hey, we're going to do the heavy lifting for you. We're going to lay out all the, you know, the meetings, the plans, the teaching content. As we talk about some of these concepts together, we do all that for you. You really just have to show up for your son, you know, and be there and do the things with him and talk through the things with him. And we'll, you know, lay out the pattern for you. But it's an amazing experience.
Oh, wow. That's just it's spiritual medicine to hear. I'm like, wow, I have two daughters. So it's like my queen will have the fun. She was looking up similar type stuff for the mother daughter.
Yeah.
Guys, men listening in, like coming into landing here, I know there's a lot of you out there are fathers, and obviously, you know, statistically, there's going to be a lot of fathers who have sons. What an opportunity. What a fucking opportunity. The gauntlet is set there, and I just know listening in and feeling into your energy, Don, it's been an absolute roller coaster spiritual ride. A revelation for me. I've enjoyed every single second of it.
It's been fantastic.
I know guys are going to really want to hunt you down and find out how they can get themselves and their sons involved. Where can they find you online, Don?
Yeah. So I could give you a number of different URLs. I know since we're doing a podcast here, I'll try to keep it simple. The easiest way to get started with us is to get something that I call the Dad Son Challenge. So you can go to manhoodtribes.com/challenge and download this Dad Son Challenge. It will give you 10 of what we've talked about, manhood challenges that you can do with your son. It's just, you know, a bunch of different activities to do together. Some of the kind of stuff that we talked about today with the 5 marks of manhood, and you can get started with that. That will also get you on our email list for Manhood Tribes, and we'll get you some more information about First Tribe and all the different things that we do. So that's the easiest way to get started. manhoodtribes.com/challenge.
Amazing. Don Ross, it's been an honor and an absolute privilege. Thank you for coming on, man. Thanks for your flexibility and gifting extra time there, but that was an immense gift. Thank you,
sir. Yeah, it's fantastic, Mark. I really appreciate the conversation today. Just the openness, the vulnerability. It's been fun to get to go, you know, into some depths of things that I don't normally get to talk about. So thank you for that opportunity as well. And I hope it's helpful for your listeners.
Absolutely. So there you have it, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. And many of you are fathers, and many of those fathers have sons. The gauntlet, the invitation has been put down there by Don. And I know that the power of men's work, groups, circles has been so transformative in my own life. Heroic Husbands, Men's Circles, it's off the charts what's happening there. And I know that the equivalent is there waiting for you in Don's beautiful work in Manhood Tribes and MyFirstTribe.com. Make it happen. Take the guesswork out of supporting your incredible, potent, amazing, full to the brim of potential son or sons. Take them over. Takes 5 seconds. Reach out to Don and his work. The links are going to be in the description. Make epic shit happen and support your son on his path to becoming an awesome man. In perfect alignment with the mantra of this beautiful movement. Loving all of you listening in, sending appreciation to you as always. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful, kingly day.